Hello, I'm Renee Vaughan Sutherland, and welcome to Greater Than 11%, a weekly podcast that explores roles and opportunities within the creative industries, with the aim of contributing to increasing diversity across the board, in addition to promoting some awesome women. For episode 39, I'm joined by photographer Kasia Wozniak. Kasia grew up surrounded by photographs. Her father was a photographer who printed his own images. In her early 20s, she left Poland and came to London, where she studied photography at the London College of Fashion, and was then awarded the Harold Tilman Scholarship for a Master's in Photography at the University of Arts. During her course, she discovered wet plate collodion, a technique of photography. If you can picture an oldie-worldy camera, a wooden box on a tripod with a large black cloth at the back, this is wet plate collodion. It involves chemicals being carefully layered on a sheet of aluminium or glass in complete darkness and then placed in a frame and loaded into the back of the camera. Once the lens cap is removed, the plate is exposed, but it isn't instantaneous. Subjects must stand still if they are to be captured in any way that resembles more than just a blur. This process dates back to the beginning of the 19th century. After finishing university, Kasia assisted fashion photographers and also retouching images for publishers. This afforded her time to develop her thinking around image and image making. She began using the wet plate collodion technique for fashion photography, connecting the craft of designing and making clothes with the process and time in which to capture images of the garments. The wet plate collodion process is slow. Each shot must be considered, and the interaction between the photographer and sitter is vastly different to a typical fashion shoot, which tends to involve a lot of movement and continuous shooting. The images in which she produces are gorgeous. I have definitely tipped into being a fangirl after obsessively poring over her photos. Kasia also works with portraits and still lifes in addition to fashion. Her images have a precarity that gently lure you in. You are looking at an image, but not sure where it has originated, in what time period or location. Their imperfections, the traces of chemicals organically, fluidly framing each image individually, soft lines and blurs, and in the case of portraits, the intensity of the gaze. The sitter has had to pause time to ensure the picture can be realized. Kasia's work slowly reveals itself the more time you spend looking at it. At first glance, taking a picture with the wet plate collodion camera appears simple and straightforward, but is anything but. It takes a sensitivity to conceptualizing, precision in the action, but with also an openness to the unexpected. Kasia is dialed into that frequency, and it is evident in what she captures. She has exhibited a number of galleries, both here in the UK and also Europe. To name a few, the Fitzrovia Gallery London, Asafala, Concept Store Warsaw, Detour Athens, the Museum of London, Photographique in Bristol, and the Homeless Gallery in Southend-on-Sea. Her work has also widely been published in publications such as Dapper Dan, The Guardian, Wall Street International, Stylus, and KMag. And when she isn't capturing the most beautiful photos, yes, I'm a fangirl, she is guest lecturing or leading workshops at places such as the National Portrait Gallery, the Fox Talbot Museum, Central St Martins, the London College of Fashion, and Norwich Art. Kasia, you may have missed it, but I've quickly become a huge fan of what you do.
I'm amazed about
and how you do it.
I'm amazed, what a great research.
What a delight to welcome you to Greater Than 11%.
Hello. This is brilliant.
Well, I mean, it is kind of obvious. I love your work.
Oh, thank you so much.
It is so beautiful. And each image I've spent, you know, not just flicking through it, you want to spend time because they do lure you in. They're just so unique, each one.
Thank you.
You are a photographer with a quite specific practice. So maybe you can describe in your words what your photography is.
So I use a process called wet plate collodion in my practice. Mm-hmm. And that became my main focus for the last few years. And it's a process which goes back to 19th century, 1850s. It was invented by Frederick Scott Archer. And it's something that lasted for at least, I think, 3 decades in 19th century. So it's one of the longest lasting photography processes in a commercial world mm-hmm. before everything else happened. Mm-hmm. It's very slow, it requires more time, but at the same time it's very instant. So it's almost like a prototype of a Polaroid. Mm-hmm. So you prepare the plate, you shoot and you expose and you straight away know what you're looking at. Mm-hmm. So there's no time required as it is with film or other photography processes. Mm-hmm.
So when you expose it, that is the image. You don't then process it in further chemicals? Or do you?
You do. So yeah. You pour the plate, mm-hmm. soak it in silver nitrate, mm-hmm. which is a silver nitrate tank with a solution which sort of penetrates the plate and make it light sensitive. Mm-hmm. And then you load it into your camera. You have to have your subject prepare beforehand. Mm-hmm. And you expose your image however you want it moved or not moved. Mm-hmm. You then ask your subject not to move. Yeah. And you take this to the darkroom, process it instantly with various chemicals. Uh-huh. It's a first photography technique. Not a first, but one of the first ones. So mm-hmm. the steps are the same as mm-hmm. they would be with black and white darkroom. Mm-hmm. So you have your developer, stop and fixer, right. and rinse with okay. water.
And maybe we can talk about, because you have these three kind of areas that you've got fashion, you mm-hmm. also do portraits, which kind of double up as well within mm-hmm. the fashion and vice yeah. versa. And then you've got these beautiful still lifes that are... Yeah. absolutely gorgeous. All the flint yeah. and the textures in the flint really work so well with the black and white and the textures that are captured within that process.
Yes.
So maybe you can talk a bit about the subjects that you're interested in.
So I'm very much so interested in people mm-hmm. and time spent with people. Mm-hmm. It's such a different process to working in solitude with an object. Mm-hmm. And I guess my photography was always about people. Even when I was studying, it was fashion photography, mm-hmm. it was portraiture. I've never really been drawn to still life mm-hmm. until a few years ago when I went and did this small residency in Margate and mm-hmm. was thinking, what am I going to do? And I think Stephen, who asked me to be there, expect me to photograph all the incredible people who moved to Margate. But I sort of locked myself in a little darkroom I made and I was making seaweeds, mm-hmm. thinking about Anna Atkins and mm-hmm. the parallel world in between today and then and what happened and what we bring back and what Victorian times were about. Mm-hmm. The treasure of an object mm-hmm. and time. And that's what happened, really. I started focusing on that much more. And also this idea of taking yourself away from people and taking yourself into space mm-hmm. and creating your vision, that was interesting. I also work with lots of people who... I just did a new series with Lisa Jahovic, which is a set designer, which are as well sort of still life. I love it as well. It's a different way of working.
Yeah.
Very much so different way of working, very much so different way of... Even if in wet plate you really have to think about the frame you're making with a person, mm-hmm. you have to have it in your mind. It's not as spontaneous and fashion photography shoot would be where you ask a model to give you this, to give you this moment. You have to have that moment in your vision.
Yeah.
So yeah, I do that as well, uh-huh. which I really, really love. But I think all of my work is very much so set up. Uh-huh. Even the iconography series, which I did a few years ago, yeah. and they on four plates, but they very much so thought about how they're going to be. Yeah. And there's always a lot of repetition and uh-huh. yeah.
And how is that relationship when you're working, especially with fashion or with portraiture, that dialogue that happens between you and the sitter? Because it is very different to what is now contemporary as such.
Yeah. When you work with a process like this, it's very difficult to look at a person and, you're sitting here like now and you can think, oh, this would be a great photograph. Mm-hmm. But to make person pose for 30 seconds and not think about that, not consider that they've been just asked to freeze, it's very difficult. Yeah. So I think it's just tremendously different. You look for this moment and then you just know you have it or you don't. And there are moments when I stand with someone who I just met and I'm commissioned to photograph them and think, I think like every photographer in portraiture, when you sort of look at someone and you think, oh, I don't think I can do this. I don't know if I can get it. And then suddenly someone moves and you just think, oh, this is it. This is you on my picture.
Yeah.
And that's how I want you to look like. Mm-hmm. And it's like this really, really powerful moment. And it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. This whole idea of what is this person thinking about? I'm standing there. I'm almost barely able to stand in front of my camera.
Yeah.
I don't think I have a sharp image of myself, but I have expectations towards someone else to be there for me without having that experience myself. So it's incredible. That the 60, anything from 10 seconds to 60 seconds, mm-hmm. it's magical.
Mm. It's like pausing time, like I said. It really is incredible. And you feel that in the image.
And although you say, I always say to everyone, so remember, you can blink, it's fine. You don't have to pose your life.
Yeah.
You just have to be here. It's almost like a meditation process. Yeah. Like a really good friend of mine, Melody Roulin, who's a photographer, film director as well, she posed for me for an iconography project. Mm-hmm. And she said to me, I'm going to meditate. And she sat there for 45 minutes almost meditating because I require her not to change the position. Yeah. So it's just a really strange state of mind, really. In today's world.
Yeah, definitely.
It's not, but it is. So that's the trick of time.
Yeah.
And I guess world we live in, where, because it was normal. I sort of like, I embrace every mistake, every movement for me is something what Victorian photographers would chuck to the bin.
True, but it is so beautiful. Like I'm saying, it's that pause in time, and even if it's just a slight movement of the hand or the head, like that trace is there.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
As a generation, we're more about seeing and embracing anything what we make.
Mm.
So any mistake it is, any little fall down, it's okay.
Mm.
It's just a part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For me, imperfections.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the time it's like, oh, that's the bit I like. Because it sets it apart. It gives it its own sense of self.
And sometimes it's such an element of chance, which it is very often with marks. Sometimes they are controlled on some of my images. On some of them are they just a chance.
Mm.
But they absolutely fall in a place which just divides the image in an incredible way.
Mm.
Yeah. Which is nice.
Mm. Could you tell me a little bit about your career journey? Kind of where you came from, what you were interested in, and then up until now?
So I started studying photography at London College of Communication, which was just a foundation in art and design. And before that, I did a couple of short courses in relation to fashion photography. I wasn't really sure which way I want to go. I just knew I want to photograph people. I knew that my portfolio back then was also full of people and portraits. I knew that that's what I'm interested in.
Mm-hmm. And was your father
a portrait? My father was a photographer when I was small, and then he ended up being a dental technician.
Oh, wow. And did he do portraits as well?
Yeah, he's an excellent portrait photographer. Yeah, he's very, very good. So when I was very small, he had a dark room in the basement and a portrait studio in the house where people would come, and he was doing more of a... I think he did lots of projects with people outside as well, documenting places, like architectural places, and then a lot of portraiture. But then my parents separated, so there was no contact with this after I was 2 or 3 years old.
Mm-hmm.
But I sort of, I have this strong feeling that my, my admiration towards the smell, the sense of a dark room comes from that time.
Yeah.
Because I always felt very at home in a dark room.
Yeah.
So it started really from him and from me. But I wasn't in a home where my father would be a photographer and photography was a daily life.
Mm-hmm.
Not at all.
Mm-hmm.
So it was something what was there, and he would come over and take a portrait of me whenever he came to see me.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't something what was talked about or discussed. Or it was something, in a way, what I found when I came to London.
Yeah.
When I was coming to London, I asked him to lend me one of his cameras, which he was very reluctant to because he was very attached to, but he said to me, okay, you can take it for a few months.
Mm-hmm.
And because I didn't know anyone in here, I had a little film camera practica, and I was walking around with film. Boots back then was everywhere, and you could process your film for nothing.
Yeah.
I wasn't even specific about processing. I just wanted to have my film processed, the cheapest, the better. So that's what I was doing. And through this, I was encouraged to sort of follow that further by people I knew who would say to me, oh, I really like your portraits. Have you ever thought about studying photography?
Mm-hmm.
And I went to this short photography course, met a friend of mine, Zoe, who really encouraged me to go and study photography. And that's what I just called the university the day after and got a place. That's how it happened. It was last day of a plan as well. The application process was different. It wasn't as complicated as I feel as it is now.
Yeah.
So everything could happen more spontaneously.
Yeah.
And then I applied to London College of Fashion, and I was very lucky to you being there and receiving the scholarship to do MA and being able to follow what I started, my adventure with Wet Plate on my last year of BA. Because if that wouldn't have happened, I don't know if I would be here.
Yeah.
I don't know what would happen. I was lucky to go there, and I had Paul Bevan who was guiding me, and then I ended up in a studio, ending being in this wonderful space in Elephant Castle and having that time and space to explore more.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's all about the journey, isn't it? Meeting people in life and the doors open, and that's what really happened. It's like a big corridor with many doors. I'm really grateful I went to university and, I managed to do it, because sometimes you have to study things, sometimes you don't. And I definitely was a case which needed to, because I didn't have that background. I didn't have a background in art that really started when I was here.
And just discovering different types and different ways of doing things.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I think, especially studying anything creative.
Yeah, and having an access to a dark room
right.
at university.
Yeah.
And that was a time when everyone was shooting digitally as well.
Mm-hmm.
So a response from many people towards me was, why are you doing this?
Mm-hmm.
Why are you starting doing this? And it's something which I remember going to Silverprint.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember Martin first saying to me, oh, I wouldn't do this because, we're going to start and then you're going to drop it and you will invest loads of money into chemistry and everything is going to fail. So it was discouraging, but for me it was motivating. Yes. What do you mean?
I can do it.
Yeah, so there I was, I just, British Library, all the books.
Amazing. So you went back to history to also learn.
Yeah, because there was nothing, I mean, there was a course by, I think, American School Yostermann at V&A happening once a year maybe, which was about £600, which I just couldn't afford.
Yeah.
But also because it's an old process, there are manuals. They in different measurements.
Yeah.
We can't forget that in Victorian times, they tested everything inside out. Mm. So if you open a Victorian manual, you have incredible chapters. Mm. You have chapters about how to prepare things, but you also have chapters about failures.
Mm.
And any possible things are there. So then I sort of, I did that groundwork and I came back to Martin, and then he realized I'm more serious and he put me in touch with Sean, who sadly is not alive anymore. Mm-hmm. And I went to Sean and I sort of brainstormed with him and showed him the effects of my work, and he guided me through. Things just really happened, you know, like organically. Yeah. It was great.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And why do you think you were drawn to this process? Really old way of working, slow process.
Yeah. Going backwards.
Yeah.
My way of working with photography was going, starting from digital, like film, then digital, and then going back. Yeah. Because I always looked at photographs from 19th centuries and I couldn't understand why they look old to me.
Mm.
I couldn't understand the trick of mind. And this is what now, you know, now I lost. I always say that I don't see those pictures as old pictures.
Mm.
I was just fascinated by an idea of being able to photograph something today and sort of challenging that factor of time.
Mm.
And is that possible? I always try to bring a lot of elements, either through posture or garments. Mm. Because the camera destroys everything. You know, you can build something, but suddenly it's... And I don't see it, but other people can see it. But I don't see it. I see it as now.
It is of now, but you can't place it in now.
No.
But you can't place it in the past.
It's a time machine.
Either.
It's amazing.
But you can't place it in the past because you look at someone's garments, you know, not all your photos, but some of them, you're like, well, that is... contemporary, but I don't know when
or a pose.
I don't know where that has come from, or you know,
which is great.
So you're lost within the image, and all you've got is to look at the way that the person has been captured. You know, the blacks are varying tones of grey, and you know, so there's all this, you know, there's like little bits of chance that are happening within the image.
Yeah,
and you
because
feel all that.
It's an absolute time machine. It's an absolute, which is interesting.
Yeah. Who are your clients and how do commissions find you?
I work with a lot of artists, musicians, shoots for various magazines, different fashion labels, designers, music bands, I think I've mentioned. And then there's different editorial stories, which I also do, which is more of a portfolio work. And I think they find me mainly through my editorial work. Mm. And then I have also a lot of private commissions which come to me.
Is there a typical day for you?
I come to the studio, I catch up with my work, and if I have something to work on, I go down to the darkroom and explore that.
Mm.
Or I do a lot of research or reading, or I look for different possibilities of, you know, doing things and different projects. It always really varies.
Yeah. So there's no typical day.
Day, really. You sort of come to the studio, make yourself a cup of tea and catch up with your emails. And if I have a project I work on, then I'm just straight in the darkroom and I don't even look at my computer.
Mm-hmm.
If I have a shoot on, then it's a very intense day because especially if it's an editorial, it's a long day.
Mm.
It's so different because I also, to editors, I also don't send a massive selection.
But also they must understand the process.
Yeah, exactly.
That the process itself doesn't lend itself for you just having hundreds of images to send them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, when you look through a contact sheet or you look for that image, and I just have to have that. It has to feel right.
Yeah. For those of the listeners that don't understand what a contact sheet is, do you want to give a quick explanation?
So a contact sheet is a print made in a darkroom. So if you imagine having a roll of film, which is cut into four, let's say, so you've got six pictures, or depending if it's a medium format or large format, you place all of the bits of your film on a piece of paper, expose the light to it, and it shows you, gives you like little frames with images you have taken. So if I was having a portrait sitting with you, I would take, let's say, 12 photographs of you now and then print them out and look for that image.
Mm-hmm.
When if you would come to my studio, I would probably take two or three, if that would be just a portrait sitting. And that's about it.
Yeah.
And then we would have to work with that. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to a fashion story, if I shoot it, we're working with time.
Mm-hmm.
We're working with spread. So we have to have eight.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes it limiting, challenging, and exciting.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk about how your work differs between chemical-based processes and digital, which you've kind of touched upon there in relation to our fashion shoot?
I have to prepare everything I work with. So the plate has to be pre-cut to the size I shoot on, has to be cleaned. Each chemical, so the negative part is made up, and I do that myself. And the process afterwards is very similar. I still have to work digitally and make my scans digital. I try to do as little work as possible on them. The difference is that with digital picture, you sort of have an image how you would like it to look with in terms of color palette. So I think a lot of photographers have got their feel, you know, their sort of way of looking at the world and colors which they feel more attached to. They would be either warmer or colder. And I have my developers, you know, I have my developers, which I know what they're going to give me. So, or my collodion mix, which I know what colors, because it's such an early process, it's not sensitive to all the colors. So all the reds, all the yellows go black and greens. So, but it also depends how much magenta or cyan is in that color. So you can have a really navy blue in front of you and it comes out very white, but then you can have very similar navy blue next to it, but it's got a little bit more darkness to it or warm tone, like this yellow thread fed through it, and it's going to go very black. So it's all... you know, it's all sort of, I'm just about to do a lookbook for one of the Central St. Martin students, and her collection is very much so based on different black textures, and I can't wait to shoot it to see what's going to happen.
I am really intrigued by that process of the unexpected.
And you can have really beautiful yellow. We did this shoot, I think it was for King Kong magazine. There was this one garment which was yellow with little blue drawings, and yellow, you know, yellow is a very dark color. So suddenly the image we had in front of our eyes, which was very bright, the room was bright, the lights were bright, the person was bright, he was very happy. And suddenly we all looked at him and, you know, it's all, I knew it's going to be black, but I didn't know how dark the image is going to become. So it's incredible. It's great. So with digital, you know instantly. In there, you know. It's almost instant, but you don't know. You never know.
And in terms of you coming up with a concept, even for editorial or for any of your portraits or still life, what is your process?
I guess if I work with an artist, I know something about them and I try to convey that through the lens, through their posture or through the way how they move in front of the camera, or I'm just thinking about something with my interaction when I see them. With editorial, it's very different. It's sort of, there's always a theme which we have in mind. So there's always a theme I follow and I try to introduce as many elements as I can into it. But I think a lot of my work is about diversity and about me being in London when I look at it retrospectively, and a lot of things we are exposed to and cultures and the way how things intertwine together and how they work in such a busy environment. And this idea of bringing old and new, and I always mix that in every editorial I work with. There's always a communication between past and present. And it's very deliberate. And even, you know, even if you would have this garment which maybe says today, then I would make a person sit in a very rigid way. So not losing that that link.
That connection.
That connection. Yeah.
You obviously work in a very specific way, but what skills would you say are needed to be a photographer?
Just curiosity to portray someone or something, because it depends what sort of photographer. But I guess with portraiture and fashion, and especially with portraiture, is just this curiosity of meeting a new person and exploring a new person in such a limited space of time and being able to deliver that. And just an eye and fantasy, I think.
What is one of the biggest challenges you faced in your career?
There's loads of different things because it depends what you think about. There could be things which happened to me on shoots. I was working on a project which was in 2016. It's called Polki 2016, which in Polish sounds stronger than in English because it refers to Polish women. And the government at that time started working towards the abortion law was changing. And it's a constant, constant dialogue in there. So Asifal asked me to come and do a show at this space, and I said, oh, that's great. And I think they wanted me to bring my work, and I sort of asked them if I could come and maybe do something there, and we could then exhibit that in Warsaw. So because of what was happening then, I suggested to maybe photograph women who are taking part in different manifestations. We were very lucky to have access to a lot of established, not powerful, but known women in various industries, which were supporting what we wanted to do. It was a rebellion, but it wasn't. It was more of a statement showing their faces and saying what they do. So I flew over to Warsaw. It was, I think, April, end of April. The weather was horrific. We had this incredible apartment to shoot in on the terrace. The rain was pouring down. I have to install the darkroom on the roof with a bit of, it was the most DIY situation that ever happened, I think, but it always happens to me. I always make darkrooms in the cupboard. So suddenly I open my camera, I open it up and I have to put it together. You know, the lens is separate, the lens, everything is separated. Mm-hmm. So there's a box, you have to open it up, and there's a lens board, which is not there. Oh. And I'm in Warsaw. Mm-hmm. And I have a person coming in half an hour. And I'm just basically stuck. So I just had to somehow secure the really heavy Victorian lens on this camera body without having the board, which was, for me, it was very challenging.
Yeah.
At first, I laughed at myself thinking, there you are. I mean, at least you have a camera. Good, you didn't forget your camera. But
you fixed the problem, though.
I fixed the problem.
There you go.
Amazing. Of
You're
course.
Incredible.
No one knew about it. I had lots of gaffer tape. You know, my camera is always covered with gaffer tape, but that was... It was a Dallmayr lens, which is heavy. It's brass, you know, it's brass. So when you imagine a hollow body of a camera, you need something sort of to keep it.
Yeah.
And light leaks are the biggest, you know, not the biggest, but light leaks in the camera, they're not friendly for wet platers. Yeah. They're not very friendly.
Okay.
One of the first things I think when people don't realize when they start working with wet plate and they think they're failing is light leaks. Light leaks in your camera, so...
So it's slotting into the box, basically.
Yeah,
and if there's any light coming in around where the lens is slotted in, then it's just your photos
and the tape,
struggling.
And the tape isn't light-proof, really, you know.
Mm. So what do you love about being a photographer?
I think I love meeting people, you know, and I love working with people and just the chance to be able to create something in such a unexpected way and create something tangible of it, I think. Just having a chance to create, really, and play with people, play with fantasies, and because that's what fashion is. Fashion is real, but at the same time, it's a big fantasy which we all create, and and it's such a beautiful collaborative process.
So how do you fuel your own creativity? Where do you go? What do you do?
I go to galleries and see the shows, but I think very often when I have a lot on my mind and I need to create, it wouldn't be a gallery where I would go and look for inspiration. It would be a forest or a sea. I very often sort of hop on the train from London and go to Broadstairs and walk from Broadstairs to Margate. It's just really powerful, empowering journey. The sound, I think.
Yeah, the sound. And the movement.
The movement and
the
lack
smell,
of people. Yeah, it's
colour, the sky and the ocean. Yeah, I'm a big, I go for sea walks.
Yeah.
Every week.
Yeah. Where do you go?
Yeah, Southend-on-Sea.
Nice. Yeah. That's lovely. Yeah. I've got to visit that.
I have so loved chatting to you.
And thank you.
So can you tell me what you've got coming up in the next few weeks and months? What are you working on?
So I have another show with Lucy, Lucy Gladhill.
Who was on a few weeks back.
Yes.
And who recommended you.
Oh, yes. She's so lovely. So we're doing another collaboration. So we did a collaboration for Collect, which was shown at Saatchi Gallery. We sort of are very eager to make more work together. And then I'm going to do a couple of fashion projects. That's what's in store.
Okay, cool. So before you go, something I ask everyone, is there a career or job in the creative industries you know little about, you'd like to know more about, potentially I could get that role on? And secondly, is there a woman that you would recommend or would like to hear on Greater Than 11%?
I guess curation is always something.
Okay.
You know, what in a way, I had a little access to looking through different photographs for a printer I worked with, Brian. But I guess I was always fascinated by curation of photographs in space.
Okay.
I've never sort of experienced that, and it was always something what I was always wondering, shall I try and do an internship somewhere and learn more about it?
Yeah.
Martina Spetleva, who works with sustainable fashion, and I think she's very interesting because she raises a lot of awareness along that subject, which is now raised in fashion globally at the moment, but she's been doing it for a while and trying to... you know, works on very bespoke made pieces, but at the same time very conscious of where they come from and how they are made. And she's done this incredible thing with tracing her leather through little apps. So she's very forward thinking with her work, and I think she's very interesting. There's also Kana, who's a ceramicist. I don't know if you've heard of her.
No.
That's another really interesting word in London, I think.
Yeah.
There's a lot of nice ceramic studios. I think that's nice to follow because he's very much so... utilizing the skill as well. And with her work, it's all about hand molding. It's beautiful.
Yeah. Oh, they both sound amazing.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming in. Thank you for taking the most beautiful photos that honestly I just love looking at. I can't wait to see more. So thank you, Kasia.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed, please write a review and rate, as that helps other people find Greater Than 11%. Also, stay subscribed to keep up to date on the weekly releases. This podcast is made possible by the support of Hub, an insight-led content agency based in London. A huge thank you to the producers, Pat Murray and James Haverson, and to our editors, Daniel Clark and Laura Francis, and to Maria Continenza for designing the beautiful artwork.